Greetings. Welcome back to another Truth Factor discussion, the time where we sit around the table, figuratively speaking, to factor the truth of God's Word into your life and into our lives as well. One of the reasons why we do this is because we like to study the Scriptures, and we really enjoy studying with one another. And having you with us for this study, it just means so much to us, and we would love to hear your thoughts and your comments. If you have any thoughts or comments you'd like to share with us, you can join the study today either using the live video feed on our Facebook page, or our YouTube channel. There's a comment section, a chat section associated with each one. Or you can send us an email. Send it to questions@truthfactorlive.com. Or if you hear something that one of us says that you just don't agree with, well, just not attack, but send them a letter very personally. Paul@bob@tom@truthfactor.com. And you'll see all that on the screen there. So, real quick, did y'all hear that Brother Paul Earnhardt passed away yesterday?
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, he 92 years old. He had fallen, I gather, just recently, and the situation from that became worse. His wife is actually a sister of one of our members, and
I think it's almost fitting that we're doing this topic, because if all the tributes are coming in this morning, if one thing Paul was, he loved to mentor young preachers, and he loved to be around them and encourage them. And so, you know, this is a show kind of in that same spirit of things we wish we would have known when we got started. And actually, yep. Paul, if I might speak a little bit more, I never got to meet Brother Paul Earnhardt, but I did get to see some of his wisdom distilled through Facebook over the years. And, you know, some of my friends who are preachers, they had known they wanted to preach since they were like five. And for me, I'm like, I never had that desire. You know, that's a different thing. But Paul Earnhardt one time said, I started preaching because I thought I could help. And that alone summed up why I started preaching. I could have done any other thing and made more money. But it wasn't a calling per se. I saw a need. I'm like, I could probably do that. And I'm like, if Paul Earnhardt said that was his reason, I'm like, that's a good enough reason.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Well, I'll share one brief story with him. He held a meeting for us back in 2009. So I was a little bit younger then. And I like to joke around a little bit. So I was taking Paul back to the airport, and we drove past Lake Hefner on the highway. And so Paul asks me, he says, where do y'all get your water from? I turn, look at the sky. And he says, I'll ask it again. Where do you get your water from? I thought, okay. He was nice about it, but not. Yeah, he didn't just erupt into laughter or anything, but he was I enjoyed that week with him. So, and Brendan did kind of touch on, we have a secondary title for today's study. The title is Five Things New Preachers Should Know, or Five Things I Wish Someone Had Told Me Before Becoming a Preacher. And that's a lot of times, because you can read a bunch of books, and there are a lot of good books out there. A lot. There are some good books out there on preaching, but there are some things you get into. And I'll be honest with you. What we're going to be talking about, there you go. I'll be honest with you, as if I wouldn't be. But what we're going to be talking about today, while we're talking about fellows who are entering into the responsibility of preaching, some of the things we're going to be looking at applies to everybody. When you're talking about someone serving as an elder is not one step above a Christian. All the qualifications for an elder, with the exception of maybe one or two, already apply to every single Christian. You think about that. And so the same thing for a preacher. Everything that we would expect out of a preacher should be expected out of every Christian. There are maybe one or two exceptions, obviously. But basically, we're all children of God, whether you are a preacher or you're a working member of the congregation in any capacity, serving as an elder, a deacon, what have you. All the same qualifications and expectations. And so this will apply to you as well, even if you aren't a preacher. So something to think about that. We have several in the chat room have already jumped in, said good morning, welcome, it's good to have everyone. Some are commenting about if you really, what Caleb said, tip one for young preachers, get a wall of books, you know. And that's what all, Tom's got the smallest wall of books behind him, but it still counts. And so that's
I do it here.
We measure scholarship.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's not my real wall of books, though.
So. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm ditto for Tom. Most of my library is actually off screen towards this side.
Yeah. I will admit, some of this is kind of decorated because of the camera. You know, I've kind of rearranged a few things just to aid, but these are real books. I mean, there's.
Yeah. Hey, John, what's in them?
Paper, ink.
Okay. Great. Words. Okay. Glad to know that. So.
Dust mites.
Yeah. This right here is Zur's commentary. And these are the pulpits. And we got a few of the Truth magazines and something red. What are these?
I got some of those.
Huh. Oh, the Living Word commentary. I picked it up at a yard sale or something.
Yeah, those are pretty good.
Yeah. I'm just going to comment here.
I think the one year I went to Florida College, that was one of the required readings for one of the courses.
Really?
Okay. I believe that. At least it was a red book like that. So.
Not long ago, I saw a thing that said
the best
commentary of Living Word, the best unit of Living Word is one on Thessalonians. And so I had to get that. I didn't have that one.
Well, I'm gonna throw this out one. If anyone finds the Living Word 2-volume set on Matthew by Jack P. Lewis, you have a potential buyer, because I need to find that. So
I will.
That's interesting.
All right, I don't have it.
How much?
1,000.
No, never mind.
I got to read them first. So, an introductory point. Don't assume that you have to have a wall of books in order to be a preacher.
No.
Okay. That's one of my biggest issues when I first went into preaching is I was stubborn against books written by men. Okay. I'd only pick up, if I was given a commentary set, we did by pulpit later, but I was always super leery of anything written by men. And that can stymie your growth, but it doesn't hinder ultimately your growth if you're studious in your studies. So
I know a brother like that. He's an elder and not here, but yeah, I wouldn't have said it if he was an elder here, because he might be watching. But anyway, he just didn't care about commentaries. He didn't care what some man said. Well, you know, I'm glad people didn't feel like that in the 1800s when Alexander Campbell started preaching. Not that his word was the word of God or anything, but I tell you what, he really opened a lot of minds and hearts with his uninspired words by his knowledge of the inspired word.
And I'll just throw this out there, that a commentary is no different than you sitting in a pew listening to a sermon.
That's right. That's exactly right. He's just a man.
Just the same discernment and fact-checking you do with the sermon, you do with anything else.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
Okay.
How old are you, Brendan?
29.
Yeah, you're wise through your years, man. Wise beyond your ears.
Well, he's been studying with us for a couple of years now, so naturally he's going to be a little bit smarter.
That explains it.
Yes, it just osmosis. It has. I've absorbed a lot of that knowledge.
Okay.
All right. So we'll go ahead and start. There is a question that's popped up on the Facebook side, out of context with what we're going to be looking at.
There is a question that's popped up.
There you go. But I think we could probably, if they can stay with us, address that question maybe under number 4. Y'all see the one I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's plan to do that. Yeah. So if the one who dropped in the Facebook question, stay with us through the study if you could possibly do that. We will talk about that in our number 4 points. I think that would be a good time for it. So let's go ahead and begin, and I'll go ahead and introduce the first one. Tom actually keyed it in there, but Tom's got a couple other points here he's going to be making. So I'll go ahead and introduce the first one here. So first thing, if you're thinking about being fully supported as a preacher. Now, there's a couple different aspects of this. All right. When people talk about becoming a preacher, are you talking about being fully supported by the local work? That opens up a whole kind of another door, another room of discussion there. If you're talking about doing the full time work, but maybe you work a secular job, a little bit side of that as well. But the point is, you've got to make time for your family. And whatever route you take this, you have to make time for your family. I have known situations in the past where the preacher would put extra time in. And when I mean extra time, I don't mean he's staying at the office or working on bulletins, but oftentimes he would be at the beck and call of the members, so much so that he ended up missing crucial events in his teenage kid's life because a member called and said, "I need to talk to you." You have to learn to be able to balance the amount of time that you put into preaching and the time you spend with your family. Now, I recognize everybody has that problem. If you work 50 hours a week at a job, you're working at a mill, wherever, you still have to try to work that balance in. But with sometimes preaching, you can't actually say, well, I've worked 50 hours this week. Okay. It's not a time clock style where you can say, okay, I'm done. Now I don't have to even think about it. So you have to really work hard and be very conscious about making time for your family. Let's switch to everybody else. What do y'all think about that? Any thoughts? Go ahead, Brendan.
Well, John, I'll throw one in. This goes back to books, but ties into this. You can learn a lot by brethren's books on preaching over the years. I have a lot on my shelf. I have since found out later that a lot of those men who wrote books on preaching later had different ideas about how you should use your time. I've had to learn that the hard way, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But for example, I won't say the author, but I have a book here called Sermon Design and Delivery. And in the back, there's a sample schedule of what this person thought the preacher should maintain. Let's just take Monday, for example. I'm going to suggest to you this is not how you have scheduled your time. 6:30 to 7:30 a.m. breakfast, 7:30 to 7:45 a.m. family devotional, so 15 minutes. 8 to 12, personal business, hour for lunch, hour for reading, from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock, visitation, hospital visits, shut-ins, etc. From 5 to 5:30, half an hour, dinner, and then from 5:30 to 6:30, family time, 1 hour, and then 6:30 to 9 o'clock at night, personal work, showing film strips, etc. Family time should not be scheduled to a grand total of a minute number amount for each day. You have many different priorities God has given you. If you are married with children, you are primarily the head of household and father and husband, to me, and Christian first, preacher second. You know, Brother Haley, I never got to meet him, but he advised every young preacher he came across in his later years. He said, do not get so busy saving the world that you end up losing your family. Because of all the kids he had through his two marriages, not one remained faithful. And as my elders have told me, as I was overworked recently, and I said, I need to take the next 2 days off, barring a baptism or a death in the congregation, I don't need to be called. And know what my elder told me? He says, you have us if there's a death in the congregation. So, not that those things aren't important, but you got to figure out where your priorities are at, where your obligations are at, and you got to learn how to balance it. There are times, yes, well, you'll be called away and you have to deal with something as an emergency, but to miss important events in your kids' lives, because you know, I'm not married with kids, but you know, you kids are going to remember not how many souls you baptize, but well, Dad was always so busy doing X, Y, Z that he was never there for us. And that's, you only get one shot at raising your kids. And you want to do the best you can while you have that opportunity. So don't neglect the family.
You know, Brendan, I've wondered oftentimes about, let's see if I can get back to where we're supposed to be. I know what's wrong. There we go. I've often, when I was younger, there were opportunities to go overseas to work, but my kids were young. And kind of the conclusion I came to is I'm going to wait until my kids leave home. And then I'll have more time with my wife if we needed to do that type of work, you know. Because your kids are only there for 18, 19 years, and really formidable 15, 16 years. I mean, it's one shot. And so it's a good point. Yeah.
Something Phil Martin had said that he got from Brother Ron Halbrook was, don't worry about getting meetings and doing mission work while your kids are young. That will come later. Yeah. Spend that time on your kids and your family and your marriage, because, you know, kids can all, sometimes you got to balance even that, those two relationships in that. So,
you know, if you start preaching meetings too soon, you may wind up dealing with the trying to remove the bad influence that your error left behind you. And so, not that there's anything wrong with a young preacher having gospel meetings, but yeah, I think you're right. I think a young preacher can probably spend too much time doing that without the balance that he needs to have. And of course, that brings us down to point four or five, I think.
Four definitely.
Third, yeah.
You think about pride and arrogance?
Yeah, you need to get that out of you, whatever amount of it exists. You need to make sure you get that out of you, and so that you don't think more highly of yourself and your abilities and your talents than you ought to. And I've known people run around trying to get debates with people, and if I'm challenged by what I've preached and I'm convinced that what I preached is true, I'll answer the challenge. But I'm not interested in building up any kind of a following or any kind of a reputation as a great debater.
Yeah, I understand. Tom, you had a thought.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of things to say about that. Just a couple of observations here. And we've been dealing with this. You know, you hear the expression, it's not the amount of time, it's the quality of the time. I'm sorry. Quality time involves quantity time. I mean, it's just a part of it. The other thing is there's a word that preachers need to learn, like everybody else. It's just two letters. No. I mean, you can't do everything for every. You cannot do everything for everybody. And by the way, once you start saying no occasionally, people learn that. And you may be criticized by some because of that. But the bottom line is, it's not just about saying no. You don't say it all the time. There are times you need to make yourself available. It's just you've got to manage your schedule. You know, Brendan gave that example of the Monday. That's just somebody that, like you said, you pencil in every minute of every day and stuff like that. I preached a sermon on busyness just a few weeks ago. And, you know, one of the points to make in dealing with busyness is, you need to build in margins, because things happen, and there's things in your schedule that need to be flexible also. So, that's this point. So,
well, and to Tom's point, we learn to say no so we can say yes.
Right, exactly.
And see, it's you got to get clear, and this, I'm going to touch on this, but you got to get clear what your work actually is. What is your biblical mandate as the preacher? Because As another preacher once said, the big problem with the church today is that the elders are deaconing, the deacons, the preachers are eldering, the elders are deaconing, and the deacons don't know what to do. We get that so confused, and sometimes the members do too. Like, as a young guy with a lot of experience, it's easy for me to say when a member comes to me, it's like, hey, I need help with this personal issue. You need to go talk to your shepherds. They're more equipped to handle that. Unless I'm personally involved or I can help through biblical counsel or whatever that, but getting clear on your mission, the elder's mission, the deacon's mission, and do not be afraid to delegate, because sometimes the preacher gets brought things that it's really an elder issue and not a preacher issue. And so get clear on that and say yes to the things that really are in your sphere of influence. That doesn't mean you don't go out of your way. Every Christian should be doing visiting. Every Christian should be helping in the best way they can. But we say no so we can say yes to the important, the mission-oriented things that really are where God has placed us to do the most good.
Along that line, I think the more you say no, the more it means when you say yes. And the more you say yes, the less a yes means. Everybody grows to expect it. And the more they expect of you, the less they appreciate you.
Yeah, and they will exploit you. If you say yes to every little thing, they will exploit you. And I think there's another point later on where we kind of touch on this again, deal a little more with some of this.
All right. So real quick, a lot of good discussion there. And you're right, we're kind of bleeding over a little bit into some of the other sections there. And there's been a lot of comments in the chat room, in the various chats. I'm not going to try to bring them all in. I do want to pick up with Buddy's comments. Not Buddy the Elf, but this is Buddy German. Let's bring that in right here. Where is it? There you go. So Buddy makes two comments. We'll bring him in. He says, similar to the military, there isn't a time clock. Balance is something that comes with wisdom and time. Every person and situation is going to be different, and you have to adapt to each. I think that's a good point. There was a preacher, Robert Hudson, I think was his name, out in California some years ago. And Robert talked about his study schedule. It was so wonky. He worked best at nighttime, and we're talking late at nighttime. So, he didn't keep regular, if you would, office hours, because much of his time studying was spent late into the night and everything. And so everybody, you have to figure out your rhythm. If I can use it like that, you have to figure out how you study, develop lessons. That's a very good point. And let me bring in, real quick his next one. And then Brandon, if you got a comment there, we'll switch over to you. He goes on to say, you can do a lot of things good, but can only do one thing at a time great. So you have to find the balance and where to focus that great energy at. Excellent point. Go ahead, Brandon.
And this is about the family, but it's turned into a bonus point. So we got six points today, but preaching the blessing and the danger, that's a two-edged sword on this point, is because our time is flexible, that's a sword that can cut both ways. We have the blessing to be, your wife needs to go run an errand or whatever, and you can be at home with the kids and you'll rearrange your schedule or go see the doctor. You have that flexibility, but if you don't exercise self-discipline, you can end up being a last minute Nelly and you're doing all a week's worth of work Saturday evening and trying to get everything done. And that just doesn't happen. Also to that point is preaching is one of the few professions, if we want to call it that, vocations in which you can get to a point where the best thing for you to do in your workday is to step out of the office and go do something else for a little bit because most of our work's up here. I find that when I get to the point where nothing's coming together, that's my cue. I need to go outside and I'll just go work out or run some errands real quick because stuff's working in the back of my brain, but I just need to get my active mind off of whatever I'm working on. And is that being lazy? I don't think so. I know what works for me and I need to go out, take care of a few things. And when I come back, 9 times out of 10, I know exactly what I need to write or that point's come together. And so for me, me balancing to make sure I have time for everything, I tend to front load my week because I know I need the extra time to let things sit so I can come back to it later. Other guys aren't like that. Homer Haley did all of his sermon prep on Saturday morning. He locked himself in his office until he had two sermons done. That worked for him. But to echo John's point, every preacher has to find his own balance, what works for him and his family.
Yeah.
You know, I know some preachers where the wife works out of the home just so they can afford quality insurance. You know, his work schedule is going to look different and his priorities are going to look different than me as a single preacher. You know, I can work whenever I want. I don't have the familial responsibilities yet, you know, but there's probably going to be a day coming where I will have those and my schedule will have to change then in order to make sure I meet all those priorities that God has given me.
That's a good point. Bob.
You know, I find that, yeah, leaving your laptop and getting your mind on something else, something that's not deep, can free your mind up and thoughts will come into your mind. This happens to me quite often. I'll be sitting in there, maybe watching a little TV or something, and I'll think about a point. Yeah, I put that in my sermon. and so I walk over and I start working up, you know, working up the point, you know, finding verses. And sometimes I rearrange my entire sermon because of that thought that I had. And so, yeah, it's kind of like the greatest discoveries in the world came about when they weren't even looking for what they found.
Yeah. Oh. To that point, I mean, it's apocryphal, but, you know, supposedly Sir Isaac Newton came up with the idea of figured out gravity because he was sitting in the orchard just minding his business. But, Bob, you said something that reminded me, and this is another bonus point. Every preacher ought to have one or two hobbies that have nothing to do with preaching.
Yeah.
Just so he has a life, but also it gets his mind out of things. So, like Bob said, you can start get those creative juices flowing. So,
and what if Newton had been sitting under a fig tree? The fig Newton would have been invented hundreds of years earlier.
Okay.
What would it have tasted like? Never mind.
Well,
let's move on.
So in the chat room, real quick, Caleb threw a couple comments here. Let's bring it in, and then we'll see if anyone else here has a comment, and if not, we'll move on to our second point. Caleb says, I've heard a church – wrong one. We'll come back to – no, that's the right one. I've heard of churches that require a preacher to keep a time clock. So what happens is I do think there are within some people a there's an easy perception. I've been down to the building. I had to stop by halfway through the week, and the preacher wasn't there. And that's happened 3 times this year. Where is he? What does he do during the week? Well, the preacher I knew when I was growing up, he went fishing all the time. You know, they have some sort of preconceived notion that prevents them from seeing all the work that is being done. Or maybe they've had experience with lazy preachers. I have known of preachers who were lazy, and I've said before that during the day and age of the internet, if you want to be a lazy preacher, it's a piece of cake. There are sermons all over out there. So go fish 5 days a week. Saturday, plop down, pull a couple sermons out, make them your own, preach it on Sunday. I'm not saying do that because the church who is supporting you and the congregation's helping to support you, if that's the case, they're trusting you to do the work of evangelist, which is much more than pull a few sermons and then throw them out there. But that's where some of that comes from. Misconception of people or maybe assuming the preacher doesn't work. He says also Sunday comes every week, even if there's holidays that week. That's true. That's a very good point. All right. Let's see.
And just along that lines, a lot of congregations have appreciated the fact that, you know, the preacher doesn't get the 3-day week or the 3-day weekend, you know, or the 4-day weekend in some instances like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of congregations have appreciated that and they've made accommodations to help the preacher from time to time, you know, give them an extra Sunday here and there. Or I know of some, I think a good way for a congregation to adjust that is pick a Sunday night a month where either a member speaks or a sing night or something like that. So the preacher, at least he gets a half a break, you know, assuming you're assembling twice, from that standpoint. Anyways, yeah. Go on. So,
Brian, you had a thought?
Yeah, I was just going to add one thing is a lot of times members just don't understand what the work of an evangelist is. And, you know, variety of maturity levels is part of that. But truthfully, it's not as though there's a specific formulatic, this is what the preacher does every week kind of thing. It really depends on the congregation and such. So one habit I developed early on that really kept me out of trouble with people who might say, hey, what is our preacher doing? What does he spend his time doing? Is I would keep records of the things I did every month. I'd put them into a report and I'd give it to everybody every month. So once a month, I would give them a report of the different things I was doing, different studies I had, working on sermons, working on classes, things like that. And by keeping them in the loop of the kind of things I was doing, I was fortunate. And part of it is I was just fortunate, but I was fortunate. I never had anybody ever come to me and say, hey, we don't think you're doing enough work, or we wonder what you do with your time, because I was always consistent about giving them information on what I did with my time so that, that question was answered before it was asked.
Good point. I think Brian makes an excellent point there. And, it also keeps you honest as a preacher. If you keep a calendar, which is how I did basically what Brian was talking about, especially in younger years, keep a calendar, what you do each day. And, you might look back over your calendar and say, wow, I wasn't very productive. Or you might look back over your calendar and say, this has been a good week. And if anyone ever asks, what do you do? You can just toss them your calendar and say, there it is. And they would have a greater understanding of that. I think that's important. As preachers, there you are, Brian. As preachers, we don't like to grandstand generally, or we shouldn't like to grandstand and say, look at what I did, but there
You've
is.
You've never seen a preacher do that, have you?
Well, but there is a sense in which we need to understand public relations a little bit, that the congregation needs to have a handle on what the preacher does so that they appreciate him more and more. Yeah. And I think you'll find that over time that people do. We do. I mean, I do here. I feel appreciated. I feel valued. And some of the things you talk about, I've experienced other places in different times, but looking at this, I just really agree with Brian that just be prepared for any of those kind of questions, but know that may pique your conscience as well a little bit, to see how well you are actually doing. So that's all I have.
If they come up to you and say, we don't think you're working enough, ask them, what do you mean? What have you seen? And then be open to what they're saying. They may have an actual point.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And to all the comments on this particular point, I try to include the members in the work as much as possible. If I have a study coming up and I'm anticipating it's going to be difficult, or I'm anticipating whatever it is, or even just a study, I try Sunday evening or something, I just make mention of it. Hey, please pray for these studies this week that I'm going to be conducting, just trying to let the members know and be involved in that. To both Brian and Paul's point, early on, it is, I think it's a helpful exercise to keep a log of what you've done today. Because when you think about actually what your job is, if you're going to stay any place long term, you can get away with just doing the sermons every week, but I will tell you from personal experience, if you're just waiting every week to like start on Monday to come up with what you're going to preach on, they're going to start sound the same. You're going to start doing the same points over and over again. And so as you start doing this longer, I have found, in order to keep myself fresh and to try and challenge me to grow, I plan quarterly of here are my sermon topics that I'm want to preach through this quarter. And that ensures that I can get a balance of things. Elders and I sit down and talk about planning for classes. And so in any given week, I have a couple of things I need to get done. I need to get done that week's stuff, the sermons, the classes, the bulletin. I also need to be start working on next quarter's material. And so I need to be studying ahead on what we're going to be doing. I need to still keep up on my personal reading for my own development. You know, I still need to prep for the personal Bible studies I'm conducting or the studies I'm doing with members for their growth. So, and this is kind of the theme of this hour is your work schedule is going to change season to season. And depending on the part of the country you're in, you know, I know a brother who preaches in College Station during the school year. It is a million miles a minute. It is go, 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 go. As soon as Texas A&M's out, they kind of have a 3-month break where it's just the normal ebb and flow of the congregation. That's what it looks like for them right now. For me, December tends to be a slow month. This is where I'm trying to get everything ready for the next year. I'm getting ready to go on vacation at the end of the year. I normally get take a week or two off, and that helps me recharge. And so I guess the big point I'm trying to say is on this is find what works for you. Be honest with your work. And a lesson I learned the hard way is do not try and fit yourself in somebody else's schedule or somebody else's expectations of what your work should be. Because I found that just brought a lot of unhealthy guilt on my part because I'm trying to, you know, be doing studies every single night when I don't have that many contacts. And, you know, you do the best you can with what's in front of you and the opportunities you have. And some seasons that's going to make you really busy. Other seasons, it's going to be not a whole lot of work. It ebbs and flows. And accepting that, that's an Ecclesiastes 3 kind of thing, though. It's just the ebb and flow of the seasons of your work. So.
All right. We need to move on. Maybe. I've got a couple of thoughts here real quick. But this is a Venn diagram of today's and next week's and maybe the third week's study. Let's see if you can see that. Probably too washed out because of the white paper. Anyway, well, you can't see that at all, can you? That's terrible. Okay, anyway.
Actually, from Blue Squiggly Lines now.
Yeah, so all the points are overlapping with all the other points. and I'm not knocking it. I mean, because we started out talking about the making time for your family. And a lot of things we talked about just in this point will bleed over in terms of the other points. It's really hard to separate them because they all kind of work together within the life of the preacher. But let's take a moment and answer that one question that came in earlier because we're not going to get to point number four today. And the question fundamentally is when a preacher sins, does it affect the church spiritually? Okay. No more or no less than when any of the members of the congregation sin. Okay? And here's what I mean by that. Why did the Apostle Paul buffet his body daily to keep it in subjection? 1 Corinthians 9:27. Why did he do that? Was it for the good of the church? No. It was because of his relationship with the Lord, lest he also be a castaway. So you can have a preacher who externally says all the right things. They present very understandable lessons and very influential in their character and behavior publicly. But if there's sin within their life, the church may never know about it. But they are still separated from God because of their sin. Okay. So a preacher's sinning doesn't affect the spirituality of the local church until it begins to affect both his work and his behavior with the brethren. And if those things become public, then it does begin to affect the local congregation. But then again, when you think about this, when Paul talks about the elders, he tells Timothy, them that sin rebuke before all. Well, in the context, he's talking about elders there. Well, if an elder has to be challenged because of a sin that they did, does the Bible say they have to step down to serving as an elder? Not that I've ever found. But what must he do? Repent. Set the right example and show the congregation. Acknowledge the sin, accept the responsibility for it, and repent and turn away from that. So it's a really a hard question to try to answer to say, does the a preacher's sin, does it affect the church spiritually? The answer is no, unless his sin bleeds out and it affects the way he teaches and the examples he sets, then yes, he's leading the church astray at that point. But he still have to answer to God for it, and he owes the congregation to repent and to turn back from that sin. Thoughts on that?
You know, John, let me take this maybe a little bit of a different direction. I'm glad you brought up 1 Timothy 5 with elders, because I think that's our best answer to say that as the rebuking of an elder steps up, the same would be true of a preacher. In fact, I let me just kind of make this point. A preacher is a qualified office in the church, just like an elder is a qualified office in the church. There are lists of qualifications that evangelists have to meet in order to do that work. One of the important lists there in Titus chapter 2, Titus is told to be a pattern of good works, this is Titus 2 and verse 7, in doctrine showing integrity, reverence, incorruptibility, sound speech that cannot be condemned, that one who is an opponent may be ashamed, having nothing evil to say of you. Now, John, where I might take a little bit of a different approach is to say that whether it's the qualifications of an elder or a deacon or an evangelist, whenever sin disqualifies or violates those qualifications, then it might be the case they shouldn't pursue that work anymore. In other words, if an elder is no longer, you know, if he leaves his wife, you know, he shouldn't be an elder. If, you know, if he's no longer, if, you know, he becomes a drunkard, he can't, you know, continue that office. And the important point to consider is that there are qualifications he has to meet. He doesn't meet them because of sin. He shouldn't be doing that work any longer. Reputation is a difficult one because incorruptibility and reputation aren't things that are easily repaired. They're not things that are easily repented. So it might be the case, again, that those are circumstances that say they shouldn't be doing that work any longer. So what I would suggest is when sin reaches a level that it damages the qualifications of the work, whether it's elders, deacons, or preachers, that preacher probably should not be doing that work any longer. So if, so going to Felix, to your question, and by the way, Felix, congratulations on the new baby. Felix just had a new baby, and I congratulate him on that. Our prayers are with you on that. But Felix, going back to your question, if an elder or if an evangelist's sin causes a discredit to his work based on qualifications, whether it's Titus 2 or 2 Timothy chapter 2, then that person probably should not be doing the work of an evangelist, at least for a time. They should step out of that because it's important to understand how those things impact them. At the same time, everybody sins. And it's not as though any time an elder or a deacon or a preacher sins, they're instantly disqualified. We have to be careful about that because otherwise we'd never have elders or deacons or preachers. What we need to say is when those sins reach a level where they disqualify them or affect their qualifications, then it affects the church. Then it's something that they have to have addressed in some manner.
And to
that's
Brian's
a good
point.
Good clarification.
And maybe I'll just use some different verbiage here. Mm-hmm. I tend to think of these qualifications as a character portrait. This is the type of man you want serving. And to me, when the sin has impacted the character, then we have an issue. Now, to address Jerry Wilcox's question, unless somebody else on the panel wanted to, in my understanding, and panel's free to disagree with me on this, but because an elder and a deacon, more so than a preacher, but to some degree, they've gone through the selection process. They have been thoroughly examined. The congregation has confirmed them, if you will, through their appointment. And because he is a leader in a public position, I would say that the Matthew 18 does not of necessity apply in that situation because the Titus is told explicitly, or Timothy is told explicitly, to rebuke in the presence of all. That indicates to me this was a public sin. This was something that the congregation was known about. And it's so that the rest of the congregation would be fearful of sinning. It is lonely at the top. There's a lot of responsibility at the top. And there is a different standard, if you will, that leaders are held to because they are supposed to be setting the example for the flock. And so the stakes are higher, if you will. And that's why sin is taken, I mean, it's taken seriously at all levels, but this is why church leadership especially is held very accountable on this, and it needs to be addressed publicly. You know, I preached on David's sin with Bathsheba Sunday evening, and one of the members are just, they're not disagreeing with the punishment or the consequences. It just seems like, man, one mistake and the rest of his life is a mess. I said, well, really, it wasn't one mistake. There was a pattern of behavior that David had in his life leading up to that sin. And we see the consequence of that in the rest of his life. But he's the king. He is he's numero uno in Israel. And so he is held to a very, very high standard. And so because of that, because of how great the moral failure was, there was very, very high consequences for that. And just to echo everybody else's point, it doesn't necessarily mean the man, depending on the sin, would never be able to serve again. But there would need to be a long, long, long break before he even considers serving again, if he's even able to. And to that point, I'm going to make a little side point here. Preaching, shepherding, I would even say deaconing, if we want to use that term, can be a very high stress office. And it's not for weaklings. And maybe I'm being too macho about this, but it's not for weaklings. You have to have a good sense of self, and you have to be able to set clear boundaries in order to make sure you can handle the stress. For me, this is how I do it. I take 1 Corinthians 9:26 and 27 rather literally. In fact, it's etched in this ring here that I wear in my hand all the time. I box in such a way as not hitting the air. I run in such a way as not without aim. I buffet my body and make it my slave. So after I preach to others, I myself would not be disqualified. For me, what that looks like is I hit the gym 3 times a week. I train in my martial arts. I have a very physical buffing of the body, because I found out for Brendan, if I don't buffet my body at least 3 to 4 times a week, I get very stressed, I get very pessimistic, and I get very bad tunnel vision. And so for the good of myself and the congregation, I go and do that. I have my release, I have my stress relief, because this job, again, is not for it's not for the weak. It's not for the men who don't know what they're about. And you're going to be held to a high standard because you're in a very public position. And honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way, because there needs to be that high level of accountability. So.
Okay. Good point. Oh, let me get back to here. Let's see. So good comments on all that. I'll backtrack on something I said. When talking about, so going back to the original question, if a preacher sinned, does it affect the church spiritually? I would say, I have to say no, depending on the situation. Okay. Because just for various reasons we've already talked about. But, and what Brian and Brennan's pointed out, there can be sins in a preacher's life that gets to the point, especially if they're ongoing. And Jerry kind of made this point from the New American Standard Version. That's kind of the idea of some of the ongoing idea behind sin. Not, let's say I'm out in public and I stumble and fall, I crack my head and I utter a swear word. Okay. That's not the same thing as someone who decides to use filthy language on a regular basis. You've got kind of two different situations. One's repented of right away. The other one refuses to repent of it and it's ongoing. So there are certain sins that would disqualify a fella from what we talked about. And if he's unwilling to get a hold on those things, or if they become public, even though he may turn away from it, it may impact his influence for a while, you know. And so there are a lot of good discussions there on that.
Go ahead. And then I was going to say, again, we're talking about a whole bunch of bonus points today, which I don't think is a bad thing. This is where, as a young preacher, when I started out, it made it harder for me to find a place to preach, but I refused to preach at a place that did not have elders. I knew myself well enough at the time that I knew that I hadn't been underneath an eldership for a long time. I needed that.
Yeah.
And a little side point, I think we kind of have it backwards. that young men have to go out to small congregations with no elders, and then the more mature men get the big congregations with elders. It should be reversed.
Amen.
It really should be. Because here's what you need as a young preacher. Your elders need to be like father figures and uncles to you. You need to have a hand-in-glove relationship with them, because it is lonely at the top. And your elders will understand more than anyone else, perhaps the struggles you're going to go through. And you need to have a good relationship with them where you can go to them with like, hey, I'm struggling with this right now. I need counsel. I need help. I need to confess this to you guys. And there's a difference between a preacher who is earnestly fighting sin and he's relying upon his shepherds to help him in that. He's not disqualified from preaching. He's doing what any other Christian's trying to do. He just has to do it a little bit differently. And I would say the same thing goes for the elders. Something one of my elders said that I never thought about before, but he's right. Each individual elder has to be in subjection to the rest of the elders. That command doesn't go away just because you're an elder. And so within the eldership, there is a mutual accountability and holding each other accountable to the standards of the gospel. And there should be that healthy relationship there. And so for a young preacher, I would say, to the ability that you have the luxury, find elders. Not every young preacher gets that. No. And so, again, overlapping with, I think, another comment that's going to come up later is, find an older preacher, elder, someone that is trustworthy, that can mentor you in those areas, that you can have open and honest dialogue with. And honestly, sometimes that you can just express your frustration. But as another reality of preaching is, congregations are big ships, and big ships take a long time to turn. And you're not always going to see the results when you want to see them. And sometimes that can be frustrating. Some things don't go your way. Sometimes it just seems like you're not doing anything right. And you need an older man who's been there to tell you if, you know, I've been there and it's okay. That's normal. One illustration of this, and I'll turn it, I'll be done talking. Hugh DeLong, when he first came here, it was like 1981 or so, they had Floyd Thompson out for a meeting. And the congregation at that time was about 250 or so. And he thought the attendance was abysmal. And he was just ready to quit. And so he talked to Brother Haley, and Haley said, "What did you come to Tucson to do? Preach? Okay. How is leaving going to change that?" "It's not." "Oh, okay." An older preacher was giving the advice that, you know, just because you go to another, it's going to be the same problems no matter where you go. So you may as well stick where you're at because you came here to do this, yeah. And you can still do it. So anyway, my little 5 cents on that. So.
All right. We'll invest that 5 cents and see where it grows. Bob, real quick, if you got one more thought.
Okay. Yeah. I'll be quick because I do want to comment on something that Brendan said there. I think one of the problems is these large churches that have elders and have a large membership and a good size contribution, weekly contribution collectively. Yeah, they want to hire the most experienced preacher they can get instead of somebody that has a strong desire to preach. They've proved themselves perhaps with some fill-in preaching, and give them a chance. But unfortunately, and I have found this, I started preaching in 1977, and I've never preached in a congregation that had elders. And it's always been a small church that could not fully support me because I wanted to preach, and these were the people that wanted me to preach for them. And so, and I was glad too. And I'm not criticizing. I'm not complaining about the lack of being fully supported all those years, but I just it would have been so much better had I been under elders. So I kind of regret that, but I'll let it go at that, and anything else will fit into the point number four, I think.
Yeah. I can understand. I wasn't until I was 40 that I began working with the congregation with elders. And there are situations I remember in the past that I'd love to have had elders deal with it, because I probably wouldn't have known about it. One of the elders at the time told me, he said, there are going to be things that take place that you have no idea about and you have no need to know about. And I like that, you know, that they would let me sit in, or they would invite me to sit on the elders meetings, and I could, you know, make points and stuff if they wanted to hear it. But if there was a situation where the members had to be dealt with, preacher left the room, because they are the shepherds. And going to what Brendan said, the shepherds have the primary responsibility for feeding the flock of God. The preacher is a tool, if you would, a method whereby that is done. And so if an eldership thinks, well, we got to bring an experienced preacher in, or else this at work ain't going to happen, what are you doing as elders?
Yeah.
You know, the elders themselves.
Preacher can be an extension of the eldership, but only in that he helps them communicate to the flock and teaches the flock about their responsibilities and obligations to the elders and vice versa.
And to that point, something that we're doing here, I'm very public at the end of the year when we get ready to announce the preaching theme, that the elders and I have planned this. We've given thought to this. I'm making known that I'm not the one picking the Bible class all the time. The elders and I have a discussion about this is what we think the needs are and how we're going to address those needs. You know, making sure again, this goes in our point as a preacher, doing everything you can to support your elders as much as possible will only help you in the long run. Because you guys are a team. And, you know, I've been in elders meetings where it's kind of funny. There was one where a representative of the deacons was there, and we all talked about that kind of work of the benevolence. And then the deacon left, and it was preacher and elders meeting. And then they needed to talk about some things that I don't need to be privy to, and then I leave. And then, you know, they have their discussion. And, you know, I appreciate that I'm in the dark in so many things. And it's a mark of a good eldership that the congregation does not know the half of what's going on in the congregation.
Hopefully there's not that much going on in the congregation, but I agree with what you say.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's it. For now, there was one other thought. What was it? So there's been a lot of side discussion in the chat room, so much so that we didn't bring it into our study. Oh, I know what it was. This is all my fault. The title was Five Things New Preachers Should Know. But when I put up there, or Five Things I Wish Someone Had Told Me Before Becoming a Preacher, that opened a fountain of information. Next week, we're going to highlight Paul Adams. He has sat there today. And that's he's waiting. He's that wise man just waiting to speak.
Yeah, he's the smart one.
He's a smart one. We will continue our study next week.
Paul is waiting for that vacuum.
He's not going to get it with six of us here.
Now he's waiting for a vacuum where there's not been much said of importance. He's going to rush in and fill that vacuum.
So real quick, what we're going to be looking at next week, point number two, take it slow. All right. As a new preacher, we'll talk about that. The third point we'll be looking at, learn from the work of faithful preachers. And so, as you said, as we mentioned earlier, we'll touch on that. Exercise emotional self-control. Very, very important. A lot we'll say about that. And then learn to respect and earn the respect of the brethren. You know, so that's where we're going with our study. Will it be 1 point per week? Well, that remains to be seen. But hopefully you found it beneficial. Any final thoughts or comments?
I think I mentioned earlier, I will not be here next week. I'm going to be out of town. So
We may get 2 points done then. And if Brendan can't be here to do a Bible study.
Of course,
study.
It's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity to talk about Tom and all the ways, you know, things That's you right. shouldn't do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brendan, exactly. will you be here next week?
I think so. If the good Lord okay. wills.
You've got a monthly study. I wasn't sure if we.
Oh, that's on pause until January. So.
Oh, okay. So more yeah. Brendan time. And Paul's here. There was some conspiracy theory about Paul and Brendan since they were here and not here, you know, but they're both here. So it's, yeah.
Or is it trickery with CGI and AI?
Yeah. Clark Kent and Superman.
Yeah. After all, Paul hasn't been speaking.
So Paul's not really here.
All righty.
That's a video of Paul.
Thank you so much for joining us for our study. We always do appreciate your questions and comments. There are times like today we can't bring them all into the study, but we'll do what we can. If you'd like to contact us separate from this live stream, you can send your questions or comments to questions@truthfactorlive.com, or you can email us individually. They're seen on the screen. Just use the first short version of the name, Brian, Brendan, Bob, etc., @truthfactor.com, and that'll get the email to them. And so we'd love to hear from you if you have any thoughts or comments. Lord willing, we will continue our study next Thursday at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time. We'll continue looking at five things that new preachers should know, really before ever choosing to walk in those steps of a preacher. And so we'll continue our study next week. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Bye-bye.